So happy to see all of you here. Little bit of my background. I am a medical doctor, psychiatrist, but I'm not here to assess anyone. And otherwise, I have been with the Indian Air Force for 20 years. Okay, that's my background. And last 21 years, I have been 22 years, in fact, with the Sri Aurobindo Ashram, Pondicherry. So, I have been asked to speak on Savitri. If that is fine, we'll share a little bit about it for maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and then have questions from all of you. Not only related to Savitri, but related to anything in life. Because whole of life is a journey. That we all agree, isn't it? A journey from where to where? Some would say from the womb to the tomb. That's the way it looks. But if we go into the spiritual understanding of life, it's not a journey from the womb to the tomb. Womb to tomb is only a outer life as it appears. But if you see very clearly, you don't need philosophy for anything. From birth to death, do we grow inwardly or we don't grow inwardly? Some kind of knowledge, some kind of strength, some kind of love. Does it grow or it doesn't grow? Even at your age, you should be able to say. Some capacity as you were a child and now. Has it developed or no? Yes, right. So, it's a journey in which there is growth. This you can say from one life's experience. Okay, now the question is whether all this abruptly ends with death, finish, in which case it would make no sense that you are sitting here wanting to learn something. It would make no sense for anybody to learn anything anywhere if this is going to be the end, if the end is death, right? Am I being logical? Okay. How much ever we may or may not believe in afterlife beyond, yet even the most astute non-believer in anything higher than this material existence still wants to learn, still wants to know, still wants to do something. Isn't it strange? Some of us may have had this dilemma. I have had this dilemma as a youngster when I was studying my medicine in AFMC Pune. That what's the use of life? What's the use of learning all this? If there is no God, if there is no divine, that's the age when you challenge, you look at life and you challenge. What is God doing? All this you see around. So I had this challenge and I felt, what is the point of all this? So at that point of time, I'm sure everybody goes through their own experience. I went through my own series of experiences. And then Sri Aurobindo and the mother came when I had at one point become an agnostic. There's a difference between agnostic and an atheist. So agnostic, that it doesn't make sense when I look at life and what is happening here. If there is God, why there is suffering? Standard question, I'm sure all of you have raised it. If you have not raised it, it's not healthy, okay? You must raise. You must not believe anything simply blindly because somebody is telling you. Just by authority of the word. No, you must question. So I had questions and I didn't have answers. So for me it was like a dead end because the questionings are leading you nowhere. Everybody is referring me to a book. And the book is a book. It disconnected. It's talking all about high things, big things, which are fine, wonderful things. But why there is suffering? What is the end of all this? And the goal that was told is mukti, spiritual life. You will hear mukti. Mukti means I'll be free from all this jhanjat, jhamela, mela jhamela. I said, this is very selfish. After all this drama and painful drama, you have mukti as the last prize. So during that time, then Sri Aurobindo entered my life. Or took away my life. And then one after another everything started getting resolved and revealed. And of all the writings of Sri Aurobindo, which are full of revelations about the meaning of life, purpose of life, the journey of life, in all its details, one of his Mahavakya is, all life is yoga. So yoga is not just a set of exercises you do when you are sitting quietly. Yoga is all the time going on. By yoga it is meant our own highest, we are uniting, joining with our own highest. You may use the word possibility, you may use the word divine, you may use the word perfection, doesn't matter. Our own highest potential. So during that time, in the process, Savitri comes across and it completely changes. It's actually a life transforming poem. A poem which Sri Aurobindo has spent maximum time and love, and that gift is Savitri. This is the book which is lying on the table here by the side. We all know the story of Savitri. I think most of us are aware something about some conquest from death. Husband has died and you know she goes to the realm of death and brings back her husband, convinces Yama, literally dupes him into giving her a boon of returning back the dead to life. Now this is a story, and if you see from purely a outer perspective, what is Yama, who has died, who has returned back from death, all these questions are very natural. But if you look at it from the deeper perspective, it is something wonderful. Dead or alive is not just a question of your breath. Hold the breath, contemplate on this. Many of us are as good as dead. We are just drifting without meaning, without purpose. And so we are as good as dead. No purpose, no meaning. Eat, drink, enjoy. And one day life will enjoy us or death will enjoy us. That's the state of affairs. So death is like a wall that challenges us. Is there something beyond it? Or despite death, if death is the end point, what's the point in living at all? So all these questions we are confronted with when we face death. Death confronts us with these questions. We must raise these questions. So all this is beautifully described in this book. The deeper question, there is a book 1, canto 2 called The Issue. What is the issue of human life? We are told the issue is roti, kapda or makan. And in modern times we add to it bibi, bachcha or dukan. Is that all life about? So that's how we are told this is the issue. Even in families where you have some kind of religious background, we must know the difference between religion and spirituality. You have religious background, you do prayers, you do all the agarbatti and dhupbatti and all the fasts. At the end, what is it that people are seeking? Outwardly, a better life, which means good job, good money, good income, and God should also assist in that process. It's a life as good as death. It makes no difference our coming and going into this world. But Savitri gives us a purpose. Death is a challenge which is thrown at us. And this purpose of life, the issue of human life, we see Savitri discloses to us. What is the issue? Do we have to live life like this, as everybody lives? Or shall we take the challenge of life? Is there something beyond the realm of death? Can we learn to live better with something higher, something more beautiful, something divine? This is the ultimate story. Because if you look at the arguments in this book that death poses, it says, okay, you have had your joy and fun in life. Why are you after bringing back Satyavan? You had your share of fun. Everybody has a share of fun. That's it. You have been given this by my grace. That's what death says. Don't chase anything more. Go back. Find somebody else. Look at it. Even as a story of love, it is so heartwarming that there is a love which goes beyond death. This Indian mind has conceived these things. Whether it's possible or not, what are the difficulties, but it is conceived, and there are stories which show they are like legends where love is so powerful, it goes beyond death. We all want such a love, isn't it? At some point. Is there anybody who doesn't want such a love which goes beyond death, looks beyond death? But we find it difficult. We don't believe it exists. So, Savitri's story of love, the power of love, which goes beyond death. So here is Savitri who has chosen this man. How has she chosen? Who is she? She is a princess. And who is Satyavan? Satyavan is a prince who has lost his kingdom. And he is living in the jungles like a woodcutter. And the girl goes and makes a choice. Who were more modern? These people or we today? Tell me honestly. She goes. She is a princess. She goes all the way. And she chooses. And when she comes and reveals to her parents, who are king and queen, that I have chosen. Father, I have chosen. So father says, all right. And Narad is there and he says, well, all right is okay, but there is a problem. There is a red line. The red line is that this man whom she has chosen, because Narad can see into the future, everything is wonderful except that he has 1 year to live. Now you see, there is a choice. What is the choice? Everything is wonderful about him. That's how Narad describes. Satyavan is described as, he's not just anybody you have chosen by the wayside. He's someone very, very special as a human being, a rare flower. But 1 year to live. So they give her another choice. Go back. You see, everything is fine. You choose, we agree. But 1 year with him? Pause. What would you do if given this situation? Here is someone. It could be a man or a woman. Who is gem, rarest gem, but with you, whom you have 1 year to live. And vis-a-vis, you can choose your life with somebody, maybe much less, but it's okay, you will lead a long life, happy life. What would you do? Think about it. Answer to yourself. Isn't Savitri very challenging? Such a choice is given to Savitri. She says, I stay with my choice. Does it need an extraordinary courage or no? Yes. It's been prophesied. She makes the choice. She says, no, I'll choose what my heart has seen. And then comes the whole process. She prepares herself for meeting that challenge which destiny and death has posed for her. How does she meet the challenge? Initially, of course, she has a good time. They are both happy with each other. And then she prepares herself. She says, whatever it is, I will take on the challenge of death. I think all of us as youngsters are a little stubborn. Aren't you? If you are not, there is a problem. Okay, so say openly. A lot stubborn. Thank God. Stubborn is not necessarily bad. It's what you are stubborn about. So Savitri is shown as somebody stubborn. She says, I take on this extreme challenge. There must be some way that fate cannot be just arbitrarily that things happen. I don't know why they happen. You know, that's where we tend to stop. Though we fight, now at least we have the tendency, if somebody is sick, you don't say, oh, he is going to die, leave him. You fight. You try to give. But there comes a wall. And Savitri takes the challenge that I want to take this challenge of fate. Why is it that such a beautiful flower must fade away like this so soon? So he goes and takes the challenge. She prepares herself. How do you prepare for an extreme challenge? You have to go. You have to understand what really death is. What is it that is beyond? Death also must have it somewhere. Something must be there at its origin. Have we contemplated this question? We just accept it. Well, there is death as a fact of planet Earth. But there must be some origin of death. If it is the originating point of life, then it's an absurdity. By logic, it's a logical absurdity. If death is the original power, then life cannot be. So there is something which has intervened and human beings die. It cannot be the origin. There has to be something else which is the origin. So she seeks that origin through what is known as Savitri's yoga. What is yoga? Yoga means plus, to join, to unite. So Savitri explores in her own depths. There must be within me the power that can change death. A power which goes beyond, which is the origin of everything. What a tremendous journey it would be. Just imagine. How many of us are ready even to undertake it? Savitri is so modern. She takes upon herself the greatest challenge of life. If there is death, there must be a way to conquer it. Not just the medical way. That's there. Try to. They don't conquer death, but we can probably push. That's what we believe, ignorantly as doctor. But there must be something at the origin. So she goes, she undertakes an inner journey of yoga. And that's described in Savitri. Until she finds the ultimate truth, which is not the truth of death. Death is something like a shadow. And then she says, okay, fine. She is armed now with that truth to confront death. So, how many of us want to believe that fate can be changed? All of us, actually all of us. Yes, I'm glad. If we believe that fate cannot be changed, why would we do anything at all? We all believe fate can be changed, but we don't know how exactly we put in our effort for whatever we have to achieve and strive. But here comes the ultimate challenge. Here the fate is nothing else but death, and she has to take that challenge of death and how to change fate. So we are given secret of fate and several places. I'm not reading lines now because, you know, you can go and enjoy. But one of the lines in Savitri is, fate shall be changed by an unchanging will. So there is fate. What does fate do? No, you cannot. No, you cannot. Experience that? I cannot. The pessimist voice inside, the person who negates, no, these are nice stories. Isn't it? Have you not been harassed by these voices inside? You cannot. And there is the other part which says, no, I will strive. Even if I cannot, you still must strive. You know why? There is a passage in Savitri. It says there is a debate going on, dialogue between Narad and the king. Because it has been prophesied now Satyavan is going to die, and the queen says, go back, change your mind. But Savitri is not like, she is ultra modern. She says, no, I have chosen. I won't change my choice. Finished. She knows he is going to die. She says, I choose this destiny. I'll see what I can do. But I'm not going to change my choice. Once my heart has chosen, it chooses not again. It is written in the destiny book of God. Isn't it very, very strong, like a tonic, and very modern to feel love like that? Even to experience, to feel that, well, whatever happens, it may be right, wrong, good, bad, whatever it is. Once my heart has chosen, I will go through that. But not like a weakling that I'll sink down. But I take this. Have you seen any movie? You all must have seen movie where there is a hero, Amitabh Bachchan, and then his own son, he chooses, he's a rich man, he chooses a very ordinary girl. Ah, arre wah. Very good. There are movies like that where you make a choice. This is contrary to all your logical things, because it's your choice and you stand by your choice. It takes courage. It takes a lot of strength. It means taking the challenge that all may be lost, and yet you take that choice. Now when you make that choice, it's possible that in that particular life, it may be like you, things don't work out. Should you still make that choice or not? Should you still struggle? That's what Savitri says. So the lines go like this. O king, thy fate is a transaction done at every moment between thy nature and soul. So nature is saying, no, this is risky, don't. But your soul says, no, I'll do it. Let's do it. So it may or may not happen. So it takes into account that. Fate is not a dead end, a mystic seal. It's not like it's final. Arisen from the tragic crash of life, arisen from the death and doom, the spirit rises mightier with each defeat. Its godlike wings grow wide with every fall. What a lesson for life. We take a fall as final. Even death is not final. If you stay with your choice, it may be an ignorant choice. It's okay. We are all in ignorance. It may be an ignorant choice. But the strength of will that develops in one lifetime brings fruits in times to come. That's how Savitri describes that how the fate works. One life you may just try and get nothing. It's a real thing. You may not get what you are really striving for. But whatever you have tried goes into the making of your future. So the cycle of death and life and rebirth is not like, it has ended, or only rebirth is a mechanism for reward and punishment. It's not that. You have tried to develop will, to grow in true love. And people may say you are a fool. Better to be a fool then. Okay? These fools have changed the world. While the wise, so-called earthly, worldly wise people have just continued in the same row. And there are countless stories I could share where people were regarded as foolish. One of them which we use nowadays is Madame Curie. You know, her husband died while trying to discover X-rays. Her wife continued with that. She did discover something. And even then, people didn't know how to use it. They were using it to take photographs. And a lot of people developed cancer. I hope you know that. When the beginning X-ray came, a lot of people, in US it became a craze. Take your X-ray. So they took a film. Oh, this is how my bones look like. They all died of cancer. But today we use it. Same with the aircraft. Today it's normal. So it's a story which reminds us that, well, always the result may not come. Life, the journey of life goes beyond death. And whatever we have truly aspired for, worked for, had a steady will, it is something which we carry. This is the fruit we carry. We don't carry papa and punya as, that's not important. Papa and punya are human concepts. But what you really tried for, and you didn't get it. So it says it carries on. So it discloses that destiny, and then it is left in the balance. Well, we don't know Savitri will succeed or not, but it's worth doing what she is doing. Requires a great courage or no? On part of the person and on part of the parents. To tell a child that, okay. So is Ashupati a modern parent or an outdated parent who says, okay, take this challenge? Yes. He is a most modern parent. Even such parents are not found even today. Who says, Ja Simran Jile Apni Zindagi. But yes, it requires that courage. It requires tremendous faith. He says, okay, he's also a yogi. He says, okay, you want to take this challenge of life? I accept it. And then they start living the life 1 year. She knows. Now, when you know there is a problem, what do? We burden everybody, share it. You know what is 1 year, my husband is going to die. So people give all kinds of advice. Savitri doesn't do any of this. It's a description of Savitri's character. She doesn't do any of this. She shares her woe with none. She finds the solution within herself. In her own self, she found her own recourse. However challenging the situation may be, within us lies that actually we are given a challenge of life so that we can awaken the strength within. It's not to make us feel weak, low, and the greater the challenge, the greater the capacity that can come up. If we just remember this, that if there is a challenge to my life, it means somewhere within I have the capacity, and instead of blaming fate, instead of telling people, instead of saying my karma, no, this is my challenge, I take it. You may win, you may lose, doesn't matter. Taking a challenge is itself something very glorious. Who is better? A person who tries to climb Mount Everest but doesn't make it? Or somebody who says, he lives on the level road? Who is greater? Tell me. Isn't it? I have a very dear friend. He tried climbing Mount Everest in the Air Force. And twice he tried, and just those last minutes he couldn't make it. But great, isn't it? Rather than living on the level ground. So that's the character of Savitri. That was the character of the Indian temperament at one point of time. Let's dare the impossible. If you have that urge within you, the will, there are three secrets that are given in Savitri. A prayer, a master act, a king idea can link man's strength to the transcendent force. Then miracle becomes the common rule. See, all yoga is about, you keep trying your thought. There is the divine, there is the divine. I don't see, my eyes don't show, my ears don't, but there is the divine presence. You meditate upon that and one day the divine discloses, isn't it? That's the difference between a yogi and many of us go, we believe, yes, yes, there is God because X says so. And we do pranam and we come back. What do we ask? We ask for tinsels. That's all we ask. Thoda dekh lena hamare ghar mein. But there are some who say, I want you. And by the fact that your whole consciousness is occupied, a lonely thought becomes omnipotent. Then what happens? There is a time, like egg inside, you know, it gets ripened. So there will be a time when nothing will happen and you have to persist with the aspiration. And then destiny gives way, the veil is torn, death is slain. You see, it's a passage. It's no more a death in the way we understand. So the whole secret of that yoga is given here, which is about connecting ourselves with our own highest possibility. Why we are not able to connect? Because we go to the seat of the highest. But what do we ask? You see, if you go to the prime minister and you have to write a parchi, so you write in the parchi, mera ghar mein na drain pipe thoda problem hai. Yahan kyun aaya? Why have you come here? Isn't it? Or you say, mere city ka ye problem hai. So you'll say, okay, oh, mayor ko phone kar dena. You will not meet the prime minister. But if you say, I want good of the country, and I have some ideas and I am ready to work for it, then what will he say? If there is some merit in it, he will say, come in, I want to meet you. So that's why we go to the divine and ask for all these. But Savitri asks for that ultimate challenge of life. What is death? And she ultimately, as the story goes, it's not just force, she has the wisdom. So she follows death, mansion after mansion. What is following death? There are several ways we die. Physical death is only one of the things. As I said, many of us live as if half dead. An unthinking, unquestioning mind which just goes through life is as good as dead. So, death first argues. He says, look here, Arey, he has gone, you will find another guy, you know, much better fellow. Don't worry. Savitri persists because she wants that ultimate secret. She is not satisfied with little bit of half measures. We are happy with half measures. She wants the ultimate secret. So she goes, chases him. He says, actually, you know, there is God, but God has nothing to do with the world. He is somewhere up above, like a witness. He says, no, that's not the God I want to deal with. I want the God who is here, who can take the challenge of life. Because she feels that. How many believe that God is up there and nothing to do with here? There's a kind of thought which believes that God is somewhere up and we are here in this realm. We can please him. Maybe if we please him, we may go there after death. Post-mortem salvation. But this realm will be this, whatever it is there. Would you like to believe in that? Or would you like to believe that God is everywhere? Even when I descend into the red heat of hell, he is there. How many believe in that, the second aspect of the divine? Yes. That's what Savitri reveals to us. That is the divine. Even in the red heat of hell, he is there. This is the Indian conception of God. Indian conception of God is not God is up there and after death you are decided go to heaven, go to hell or whatever it is and then lie down in the grave for God knows. It's that God is everywhere in everything. That's the message that Savitri gives us. And that is how we see that ultimately when she has all the secrets, death is slain. Because he says even you are a mask of God. Then the fellow. So death is slain and the divine within the that comes out. And Savitri then seeks the boon of Satyavan coming back to her. But there is a last test. And the last test is that now death is slain. Divine is there. Whose death also is a mask. He says, why do you want him? You want to be happy with him. You can be happy in one lok. I'll give, there are many worlds, no? Vaikuntha and Kailasha and any of the one, you can be there, enjoy life. He says, no, I don't want him for enjoying life. I want to change things on earth. How many carry this aspiration that earthly life should become beautiful? Yes. So we are all followers of the trail of Savitri. Savitri says, no, I don't want him for just enjoyment. I want him because together we want to work for changing this life into a divine life. And that then brings the ultimate boon. They are also offered boons of salvation, nirvana, moksha. But when Savitri persists, then she is granted the boon. Together, both of you labor and work towards fulfilling this earthly life into a turning it into a life divine. So this is the story, very modern, very much connecting with our own aspiration, which does not want to flee away from the world, and very futuristic because it has not yet happened. We all want that earthly life should become a life divine, isn't it? But we don't have it. That's the reality. So Savitri gives us a roadmap. It says it's possible. And so it gives us a way toward the future. So Savitri at once connects us with something that is an event in the past, which is like an aspiration, an effort, with the present, as I said, very modern in its approach, and with the future, which is yet to come, and the path that we must take in our own little way to turn this earthly life into life divine. So this is where I'll stop, because it's a very vast, infinite something. Any questions you have about anything, not only about Savitri, but anything, you are most welcome. You can ask, I think I can hear, yes.
You talked about fate can be changed, but there is a quoting like surrender to higher will, surrender to God's will.
Yes, very
good. So, can you place a distinction between when we need to have the...
Yes, very, very beautiful, very beautiful. So this is the question of acceptance and change. So If you look at life, now let me start with where we stand. Not just about the events which happen in normal life. There is rape, there is murder, there is all kinds of cruel things. Do we believe that all this is what God wants us to go through? Yet they have been there. How they have been there? There was a point of time when life was such, very crude, its beginnings, you know, like Gladiator, if you watch the movie, or old time, you know, you'll see that life was like that, when man was very close to the animal. Now, because there is a will for change, it's a sign that now there is something new which the divine wants. That's why the will has changed in us. But change of will is not enough, because by momentum all things are continuing. Don't you feel? All of us experience it in our homes. You embody the change. That's why your will is different. But when you actually see life, the old timers, they want to continue it the way it has been continued. So we are going through that process. See, 500 years back or 200 years back, nobody questioned. People had accepted life, this part of life. But now, because now something new must come. So when this something new comes, that's what is called as an aspiration. So you can't change life by just fanciful thinking. But when aspiration comes, something deep within, that things must change. That's when the time is ripe for the change. Till then, humanity goes through a preparation. You can't change by simply revolting and, you know. So now comes Savitri as a guide. You want to change things? Okay. But you can't change by changing the externalities, because man is the same. You will bring a new system, you will change a political government, you will change a system, but man is not changed. If you want to change anything on life, you must change first man's consciousness. So where should it begin? It should begin with me. Within, I must change. So Savitri gives us that entire roadmap. So while we go through that process of change, we have to go through that strength which allows us. There are many things which will happen, which will distract us. So one has to accept, but with an understanding that, well, this is because the past is prolonging itself into the present. If you see it on the axis of good and bad and my wish and your wish, then there will be an unnecessary tussle. It's the past which is prolonging itself. One example I can give you, 60 years back, 70 years back, a lady asked Sri Aurobindo. She says, please don't make me a woman in next life. You have no clue, she tells Sri Aurobindo, you have no clue what challenges a woman has to face. What I had to do just to come here. Sri Aurobindo smiles and he replies, you don't worry. You don't have to change your gender. I am changing the world. Now, all of you are sitting here, questioning. Ask your parents and their grandparents, was it possible? Not only in India, by the way, India was still better. But incidentally, it's only because we were occupied by, you know, there was a little bit of, if you go to the US, there were no voting rights. If a woman wanted to appear when Swami Vivekananda has gone, they had no rights. You can't vote, you can't decide, you can't make choices. This was the state in the United States of America. 100 years back. So it was world over. Now that's where the will and the mother, how she started, you know, giving women and men are equal. 40s, when Audrey Hepburn was wearing a pant and, you know, people were, oh, she's wearing a pant. 40s. Here, girls and boys were marching together. So change begins like that. So if you have the will to change, that means the time has come for you to change. And for each of us, that's what is called as aspiration. We must be true to the deepest aspiration. But there will be challenge, because old momentum will continue. It's not to be seen as good and bad. It's the old momentum, past ways which continue in everything. Okay? Yes. Yes, yes, please ask.
Thank you, sir, for your talk. So in the Western worldview, like someone like Thomas talks about, the only serious spiritual question is why we are not committing suicide. So how does Indian Bhartiya Darshan talks about or the street suicide, and what role yoga can play in that?
Okay. So suicide, there is a very nice, see, one of the smallest but most profound Upanishads, which is Isha Upanishad. It mentions about suicide out of 18 slokas, half a sloka is about that. So it speaks about those who andam tama pravishanti, the third one, where it speaks of that those who are slayers of their own self, they enter into a great darkness. It speaks about that. And it says that you should not do that. You should live, try to live 100 years facing the challenges of life. So basically what happens is you try a shortcut because there are challenges of life. Now from the yogic perspective. So these challenges, we believe there is one life, we die, challenge is over. But the challenge will come back. In the Indian perspective, it will come back and come back in a much more fierce way. That's why some people have more and more challenges which we cannot understand. They want to commit suicide, they want to leave it. So you have to take that challenges. That's how life throws challenges at us, because there is no shortcut. Life is no problem. Nature says you want to solve it after 20 lives, fine. For nature, it's just death of a body. That means we are mounting up the suffering because the time has come for us to take the challenge and solve it. So in the Indian perspective, of course in Western perspective also, any religious perspective, suicide is not considered something good. And that's why people want to, you know, of course now euthanasia is something different, that's a different subject, so I'm not entering into that. Huh? That's prayopavasana. That's not suicide. Yeah, at a certain age, you are allowed a willful withdrawal when you are so much absorbed in that consciousness that you willfully, like one of the greatest, Mahavir himself. So you discard food. There is a method in that. So prayopavasana is not so, like Rama's walking into Saryu is not. So suicide is when you are in that state of helplessness, in a state of extreme depression, when you can't take the challenge of life and therefore you want to give up your life. So the state in Indian thought, act is less important, the state is more important. It's the inner state. So if you go through all the understanding of Dharma in its complexity, it's always about the inner state. That's why we revered Draupadi, though she is not revered by the Kauravas, because it's the inner state which is far more important. So here also, suicide from the inner perspective is where you have given up on life. In Jainism, what you are speaking of, and of course like in Lord Rama, your mission is over, you have done what you had to do. Now you want to enter into that highest state of perfection and you are shedding everything by default. Yes, that is allowed. Yes. Yeah, you can. Oh, okay, yeah. Yes.
So you talk about change, Alokna. So there are changes that can change radical things and continue. There are changes that become trends, and there are changes that do not change anything and things still remain.
Yes.
So if you can please.
Yes, so there are surface changes. So surface changes don't change anything. That's why in Savitri, the change that comes of conquest over death does not come through medical research. Just giving an example. So there what you are doing, you are changing the, you are prolonging the, well, you can treat illnesses to that extent. Yet so many, not just decades, but such intense research, still you see the highest, lifespan is above 100 in, say, Japan, not because of medicine. Even some of them drink and yet they have a good lifespan. And some of these places, otherwise average lifespan, whether you go to America or anywhere, it'll be around 85. That's the maximum. Now why? Because the secret does not lie in the surface manipulation. So the change to be authentic and enduring must be an inner change. So inner change is where you have to enter into your own consciousness, discover where the problem lies. For example, I may be afraid of death. Now if I am afraid of death, whatever I may do, whatever medicine, Actually, I have died 100 times before death comes. And all my life is running after the doctor trying to, you know, save myself. And then, yes, death will still come. So these surface changes do not endure. It's like fashion. And while they have their own, it keeps your little thing shimmering that one day we will conquer death. But that's okay. The conquest can only come when you go to the roots. And that's what Savitri is about. So Savitri doesn't change the destiny by finding the, you know, quick dial number of all the best doctors. She understands the working of fate is unraveled in Savitri all from deep within. Somewhere deep within, it's the soul's choice. It's not about sin and evil. And the challenges that life poses to us in the form of fate is to awaken within us the powers which are sleeping. See, there are two ways of looking at it. One is, I am helpless before fate. Kya karenge? Karma hai. That's never been the case in Indian thought. For example, Rama should have said, oh, my bad karma. Some rakshas came, took away Janki. My kingdom also went away like that. Let me become a sadhu. Does Rama do that? He is one of the icons. Does Krishna do that? Are Arjun kya karega abhi, itra ho gaya. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, Arjun, you know what? Your destiny is written in your fate. He says, take the challenge of life. So fate is a challenge. And you can succumb to it or you can take the challenge. Now when you take the challenge, then comes the process. Whether you take the challenge by external manipulation or you take the challenge from the deep within, from within outward. Because within is the key to everything according to Indian thought. So this is the whole idea about the change. Change must come. If there is a will for change, that means the time has come for you to change. Whatever be the others is their problem. If others don't feel the need for change, their time has not come. Let them be happy with you. Don't try to convince anyone. If you feel the need for change in whatever direction, the time has come for you. And now life will give you the challenge. You have to take it. Some will make a pact. Okay, I wish, but what to do? That's not a very good life. I mean, to just accept things helplessly. Yeah. Yes.
Namaskar, yeah. I asked this question since you have a background in psychiatry and medical sciences. Can you please shed light on the view on the nature of consciousness and differentiating between the two worldviews? Where in Western sciences, they assume that matter receives consciousness,
yeah. And
in Indian worldview, consciousness receives matter. So in Western worldview, we can manipulate the mind of the people through SSRIs to change mental disorder, etc. And on the other hand, in Indian systems, we say that consciousness precedes matter. So you work on the consciousness first, then other things can change. So I want to know it.
Yeah, so absolutely. So it's of course a very good question, very profound question. Almost books have been written on it. In 90s, once I had gathered a whole lot of articles and come to the conclusion that 50% believe that consciousness is primary. And 50% believe that matter is the cause of consciousness and consciousness is an epiphenomenon. But now more and more worldview is shifting in the direction for various reasons. Like if you see the electron slit experiment, you are surprised. Is the electron making a choice or is it just going through? So now I'm not going into all the details, but basically there is some kind of even element of choice which is operating even at the level of the electron. So how is that choice operating? Because if it is hard bound by matter, then there should be no choice. So even at that level, there is something called as a choice. And the choice brings in the idea of consciousness in human beings. Whether my will can change my so-called destiny or things are just going to happen as per the mechanical. So now in every field, whatever studies are there, I'm starting from there, then we'll come to. They indicate that, well, there is something called as a conscious choice which can change the operations of matter, which have been, there have been hard studies, like there is a book by Andrew Wales on purely health, a lot of studies in the field of health, that can your thinking, can your feeling actually impact your physical illness? Well, it does. Now, we may say thinking and feeling are still phenomena, it's not yet consciousness, which is okay, point taken. Now, the ultimate with all this, that if matter is the cause of consciousness, then we should have a consciousness only in humans or maybe in some animals. Now, this view has been propagated by the mainstream science, but it has been challenged now, because if you look at plants, if you look at the bacillus, the fellow beats us, outsmarts us. You start a new drug, within 6 months it has found its ways to manipulate. So if you look at everything in terms of Savitri, we have a line, in everything, a hidden intelligence is at work. Now, what is this intelligence which is at work in the bacterium, in the virus? That's why we have a fight with coronavirus, a teeny weeny little fellow, sweet nothing. Not sweet nothing, but whatever. He's outsmarting us. Because there is within it that element which is consciousness. So there is, now not going into all the details, but it's a wonderful subject. I've written even there's a whole book on that, Veda of the Body, and some other books I've written touching upon this aspect. So consciousness is the primary fundamental reality. It expresses itself through instruments. Always there have been these two views in a way. So Kant would hold this view. If you take the Western, Goethe would hold this view that consciousness is primary and all this is matter is only an epiphenomena. But in last 100 years, yes, I agree that they took this view, extreme view, that matter is fundamental, which is actually absurd. If you really go back to the whole entire journey, how does the evolution take place at all? So many questions I could raise. Now, how does a whole species take on a challenge and evolves? Why doesn't it collapse and finish? So there are many, many reasons. Savitri takes up many of them, that there is consciousness which is the fundamental reality, and it is evolving instrument to express itself through higher and higher degrees. That's how we see that speech, for example, is not there in animals. Yet there is a stirring of speech. Still below, there is no speech. They communicate usually through the eyes. Then speech comes, usually a sound. Then speech develops. Then speech develops from a child who is just saying papa, mama or whatever else. Then slowly it can develop right onto the mantra. Ishavasyam idam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat. Now this is amazing. If you just see the evolution of speech, if you just pick up anything, evolution of sight. Therefore, evolution is the key which tells us that there is consciousness which is primary. It is shaping the organs to express itself. That's how when you observe the evolution of, you know, dolphins, you know, they evolve over a number of layers. So very clearly that there is a consciousness, meaning thereby there is a conscious intelligence. Let's make it more simple. And that intelligence is developing and evolving instruments to express itself in higher and higher degrees. So this is the overall trend now, though the hardcore materialist still finds it difficult, but by and large, it's like a crumbling fortress.
So in your practical experience of treating mental disorder,
yes,
patients, have you come across any case study where you found that this patient is working in a very different way, treating himself through the conscious will without even...
Plenty of them. In fact, generally, the use of medicine, as far as I am concerned, I try to use it to the minimum. So I try to calibrate how much he can do it from within and how much medication I can use. So people have asked me, I mean, I studied my MD in FMC, one of the premier institutes, and I have given talks in NIMHANS and all these places. And so people see that there is a difference. So what you will use in a standard case, I don't use it. So I do use, because not all are ready at that point. You're totally locked. So something within you must be unlocked. But a lot is your own inner self which pulls you out. So both things you can use. There have been instances where, I'll just quote one, because you know, time, there was a lady who had come all the way from New York, and she was going through what is known as a manic depressive illness. And I don't have actually time to see patients. Now I don't see much. So because of so many other work, not because they're old retired men. So this lady had one session in Seaside Guest House, 45-minute session. She recovered completely. It's 20 years. She has been now taken to yoga. And when I go to New York, then she comes and meets just to say that all is good. So there have been instances of that kind also. where you have been certified. Now, I can't claim anything or say that, well, this is how it will work. You can't standardize. But yes, there is definitely the requirement of medicines will come down. And most important, medicines, I have seen one thing which all psychiatrists will agree. It will contain the symptoms. To that extent, it will give you a vantage point. It doesn't really cure. So, well, it's okay to get a vantage point. I don't deny that. But it's not really a cure. It contains. Yeah.
Namaste, sir.
Okay. Where?
Okay.
Okay.
Sir, I have two questions. The first one is that you have been in the Indian Air Force and it has a kind of a life very different from the general public. And also in your younger days, you were kind of had this agnostic inclination. So how did you come to Sri Aurobindo? What was your calling? And how has the journey been so far? And secondly, sir, Savitri is a phenomenal creation. And by looking at the bookmarks, I can discern that you absolutely love it. So if there is any section of the entire creation which, which is your favorite,
okay.
You would love to know that.
Okay, so first answer is very simple. And I would suggest never be satisfied. It sounds paradoxical. If you are satisfied with life, you have no quest. So I had mother's grace or God's grace that time. I had everything in life. First shot, 16 and a half, I got selected in BHU and AFMC and local Bihar Medical College. But I always felt this is not something which satisfied me. If this is all, what is the use of living? Actually, I went through that crisis. If this is it, okay, I am going to become a doctor by 21. I'll join the Indian Air Force. But is that what I am seeking? So that seeking, now I can connect. It's something which is like an aspiration. While many of my friends were very happy. I was not happy. Not happy in the sense that, what next? So this was the seeking which went into reading and trying to understand and became agnostic because whatever I read ended up with moksha. So I felt it's very selfish. So one thing I didn't want is to be selfish. I said, this is stupid. After all this effort, you are mukti and what happens to everybody and you just leave them aside. I said, better I'll do medicine and I'll continue to practice. Though at that point, all these thoughts came. What the point of living? And then, of course, when the ground was clean at the right time, Sri Aurobindo came. You'll find all my interviews are there on YouTube. Okay, so I'm just cutting this story short. So they're there about how I came. So this was the first part of the question. And what is the second part about? So I don't know. I just fell in love. So I can give you one example that I had underwent a little surgery. So it was, they didn't need to give a GA, but they wanted to give a GA. I said, okay. So when I was coming out, so the doctor was there and some people were there and my wife was there. And when I was coming down out, I was saying, Savitri, Savitri, Savitri. And then I said, all can be done if the God touch is there. So the surgeon asked, who is Savitri? So, my wife told him he's fine now. What is he saying? All can be done if the God touches. She said, don't worry, he's fine, he's perfect. I was actually, I remember during that state, I was seeing different forms of mother and it was a beautiful state. I didn't want to come out of that anesthesia. So it has gone deep inside. I just love, it's the most beautiful work. I've read a lot and lot. At one point read all the scriptures possible and Western scriptures, Indian scriptures, but nowhere I could find the completest answer to my questions. So in Savitri I find all the answers which were there, and the poetry is so marvelous and everything. So for me it's like not a book, but I have too many experiences of Savitri. And now I'm just going around, there are a whole set of talks on Savitri. Just today that 8 volumes of reading Savitri has come, where line by line sort of summaries there, not analysis. So why? Because I just fell in love with the mother, and the mother is Savitri. So love has no logic. Yeah.
Love has no logic.
Yeah.
There is a series of introduction and then...
Plenty. On Aroma, which is my sort of website, there are two Hindi and English complete talks line by line on Savitri. And just today, in fact, incidentally, There is a whole volume of reading Savitri with Alok Pandey. It's come. With Alok Pandey is mentioned because it's, well, my angle, not because of anything else. So that is also now available in Aura. So 8 volumes have come. We have kept that price very minimal, just 2,000 rupees, so that the whole Savitri is there in it, line by line, embedded. And then you have the little bit of meaning. So it's just, why? Well, it's like falling in love. There is no logic to it. And yet it contains a whole world of suggestions and possibilities. So all that I can say is I fell in love with Savitri. And of course that means that she took me as her own. So that's how. It's wonderful, amazing. I mean, I've been speaking on Savitri. Of course I had hesitation to speak because I didn't want to speak. And then I had a whole series of dreams. One of them was a very detailed vision where it was very clear that I must speak on Savitri. And then certain events happen outwardly. I was literally pushed into speaking Savitri. Now it's like, it's my life. I would not have, may not have agreed, but you threw the ultimate bait. Savitri, I said, okay, fine, I'll come. It's not about whom you speak to. Of course, this is something so beautiful because all of them are clean slates. But it's so beautiful, you know. All that I can say is that read Savitri. Don't worry about understanding it. She will understand you. It's a living, conscious, no limit to what I can speak, okay?
So you touched upon that individual change is very important for radical changes. So, but in order for it to like amplify and germination of more such changes, I need to acquire a critical mass.
Yes.
It becomes very important to bring in like systemic changes, and one of the angle can be through policy and governance. So from the vast body of literature of Sri Aurobindo and Mother, if we are to like architect a dharmic frameworks, what would do you think and what attributes we can use to build like first principles of a dharmic public policy, and which specific literature touch more upon these aspects?
So that's very true that, you know, individual change and the collective, they must, you know, slide into each other. And the individual is of course very important. I can't just go about changing the world if I have not changed myself. So you'll be happy to know to start with that at least, now I am not for any particular politics, let me put it like that, but at least in the present government disposition as of now, there are people who are open to Sri Aurobindo and his teachings to different extent. So if you have to apply, I had once even taken out 2 volumes of All India magazine which took up with relation to India, what would be the right way to approach with regard to you know, Indian life, because each country has its own unique life. That's the beauty of this creation. Diversity. We have forgotten diversity. We want everything to be standardized. That's not a good way. So life must blossom in diversity. So Indian mind, Indian thought, Indian heart has its own unique way of experiencing life. And I can say this with fair degree of, you know, experience. Last 25 years, I am traveling all over the world. And I must say that India is very unique and very, very beautiful. I mean, given a choice, I would love to be born here any number of times. So that's because now when you understand the Indian, not, I'm not talking of the outer governance and system, there's something very beautiful about the way India approaches. We can't transpose the Western systems and, you know, because Indian life has to operate in its own unique ways. So I made these 2 issues based on Mother and Sri Aurobindo's writings. They must still be there. It's more or less comprehensive issues of All India magazine. And other than that, if you want to see books which would really be very helpful, one is The Foundations of Indian Culture, which now comes as Renaissance in India, and which gives us a very good understanding of what India is, what are the lines along which it must develop. And then The Human Cycle, Sri Aurobindo's Bangla writings, they are all translated in English. So where he talks about what really Indian nationalism should be and how we should develop without excluding anything which, you know, the scientific development and everything. The most important element is that we must have a life which has a soul in it. It may sound like a cliche, but it's very, very real if you experience life as it is outside. I have good degree of experience now, 25 years going to some of the so-called most developed countries, America, UK, Europe, Australia. And the one thing which strikes you, that where is the soul? Honestly. I mean, my friends would be listening, but they know my views. You miss it. And you miss it so much. You crave. I was just sharing this experience that after 1 week in Los Angeles, not San Francisco, I wanted to come back. My host asked, "Kaisa lag raha?" I said, "I'm missing India very much." He said, "The person thought I'm missing dosa." Took me to a dosa point. I said, "Okay, doesn't matter." I said, "How to explain?" And that time I had a very interesting experience coming by flight. As the flight flew over Andamans, I was actually gone off to sleep. Suddenly I experienced all the windows opening inside in my inner being, and I woke up and I felt, I am nearing India. I didn't know. And suddenly in 2 minutes' time, the pilot announces we are flying over Andamans, which is part of India. So we are very, very fortunate. We don't realize. I know I have many friends outside, very nice people. You have all the riches, but you miss something very crucial. So India has to keep in mind that that is not destroyed. That develops the soul of a nation. In trying to over-mechanize, it is necessary part of the process. But sometimes when we make life very mechanical, you lose something which is very, very human, which is something which can make mistakes. Let me put it paradoxically. Which can love, which can feel. So that's very important, I feel. The soul of the Indian nation. Because it only can save the world. And I'm saying this not just because I'm an Indian, but look at all the various philosophies. And I've written there's a series of talks on it. The book will come out on Sanatana Dharma. And Sanatana Dharma in its true sense is the only thing which allows unity and diversity, which takes into account science, physics, geography, history, and integrates everything with the divine impulsion in you, allows any amount of exploration of the divine in your own way. So it's the widest possible view, and that's why it has persisted despite everything. So I feel if one wants to understand India and put it in geopolitics or whatever, one has to understand Sanatana Dharma. And that's the key, if you ask one word. That's the key to India's future progress. It's bound to come. Now, 10 years or 5 years, I'm hearing this on every podcast, the word Sanatana, whatever way people understand. 10 years back, this was not so. Now people speak about it. They even use the word Sanatani, whatever people understand. I'm not discussing that. But the term has come because that's what we are. That's our true identity. Even before a Hindu, we are Sanatanis. Let me put it like that. Sanatana Dharma is in our very bones, our roots, our veins. It flows. So it's a vast subject. And yeah.
Sir, one last question I had. Yeah. First of all, I'm asking this question because you said anything and everything about life. And it's a very basic question.
Yeah, yeah.
That all of us think we have an answer for. And I'm not sure if that is the answer. So I'm just asking you this. And we are sitting somewhere. All of us have struck in the world of situationships and hookups. And we are sitting here and talking about Savitri, the purest form of love. And somewhere we also listen to Radha Krishna. So somewhere I'm confused. What is the your perspective about love, and what is actually love?
Love is one word, if you ask me, is about self-giving. Unconditional self-giving. It's very rare. Hookups or no hookups, it's very rare to see in human beings or any beings, even in gods, it's very rare. If you find it somewhere, you must bow down in utter silence. It's the greatest power which exists in creation. And it's very rare. All these hookups and all these are passing things, because human beings are fascinated by this energy, but this power has been diminished greatly because of the mechanical age we live in. We suffer from, as I say, semi-humorously, from deficiency of vitamin L. And vitamin F also. F is faith and L is love. And these are the two indispensable ingredients. I can't walk through life if I don't have faith of some kind or the other. I have to have faith that tomorrow I am there. I want to do something, I need to have faith. And the second is, of course, love has been crushed because too much left brain centric civilization, as somebody said very semi-humorously, that man has two sides of the brain, left and the right, and the left has nothing right in it, and the right has nothing left in it. Okay, so heart is the center. Keep this awake. Purify love. Doesn't matter what is today and what is yesterday and what people are doing. Even if one is oneself involved in hookups, don't worry. Yeah, there is this energy of love, no? Purify it. And purifying love is all about giving in love, not calculations, what will happen, oh, that person is exploiting me. Yes, the whole world exploits, but still you grow. The tree never diminishes by giving, nor does the water. It grows. The sun doesn't grow less. So what people will say or do, they are because, you know, they have their own view of life. You will grow. That's the whole idea of growth through love. I'm not saying become a martyr at somebody. No, certainly not. But love doesn't need to become a martyr or you have to, you know, lie down at somebody's juta. No, it doesn't mean that. Love is a beautiful angel. It alone can save this world. This line in Savitri with which maybe you could stop. It is still the power, though debased, disfigured, mocked by baser mites. Love is still the power by which all can change. Love is man's lean on the absolute. And I feel a civilization without love is not worth living. It is what brings beauty, brings joy in life. And we are so afraid of this energy. When you touch it, obviously there would be many things. Don't be afraid of love. Yes, human equipment, instruments are not ready to receive it. But if you don't try, how are you going to? One day you'll become ready to receive it. It's very rare. Rare is the cup fit for love's nectar wine. Line from Savitri, okay. Rare is the cup fit for love's nectar wine, as rare a soul that can hold God's birth. A soul made ready through a 1,000 years is the living mold of the supreme descent. Descent of what? Of love. It's a tremendous power. It changes you. It changes everything. Life around. Even few moments of love are the moments which have been the most beautiful in everybody's life, I'm sure. Later on it may not work out. But those moments are the moments one has really lived. Okay, so nurture this energy, this power, and let it grow. Okay.
So much, Anugda.